I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
I'm Lars Ewaldsen.
On this edition, are Real Madrid in the same Champions League as Man City? Because they didn't look all that against Leipzig. Are Bayern or PSG the real challengers to the champions for the biggest prize in club football? And for our dispatch from the Eastern Front, we're talking about the Napoli winger with Georgia on his mind. So, Andy, was this classic jammy Real Madrid we saw against Leipzig, or are they just rubbish now?
I think, you know what, it's a really fair question, and I think when you say classic jammy Real Madrid, I think that might be in copyright Mr. Sivertsen there.
Of course it is.
I think it is worth saying that we've seen this film, especially at the Bernabeu, many times before. Real Madrid, in the second leg of a Champions League knockout game, making it apparently needlessly difficult. And, of course, it's something that some people forget as time goes by because, you know, you just look at the number of times they've won it, and these all turn out to be, you know, little specks in the rear view. You know, they're nothing really, are they? They're just almost insignificant detail as time goes by. But I think when you're talking about the Champions League as is, and whenever we're talking about the Champions League, we're not going to talk about Manchester City versus Copenhagen, but it's just a shadow that's hanging over all of this, because when you look at the programme that Manchester City have got coming up, where they're playing Liverpool in the league, they're playing Newcastle in the cup, they've got the second leg of this to come, they're in a really difficult title race, all those sort of things. They were able to not exactly treat that tie with Copenhagen, and especially the second leg, with contempt, but certainly as a second priority. Like, they were able to make seven changes from the weekend and know that we can roll through this. So why is this important if we're not talking about Manchester City? This is important because this is the standard that you have to reach in this Champions League season. Unless you're very lucky, if you're Real Madrid, and, you know, you already talked about the luck, didn't you? Unless they're lucky and someone else knocks them out for them, they are likely to be the obstacle. And surely the whole time that you're thinking, how far can we get in this Champions League? It must be a little bit in the back of your mind about that second leg in Manchester last year in the semi-final, where City unloaded on them in a way that, you know, no one would have withstood, really. And even Real Madrid, with their way of managing games and their muscle memory and all those sort of cliches about how they managed to inch their way through the knockout rounds, were not able to withstand that. This, I think, is a little different, because I think it's easy to fall into the narrative of, oh, Real Madrid just know how to play these games, don't they? They just know how to win these games. How they actually play doesn't matter. And okay, the thing that matters is that you get through the round. It's not how you got through the round, I suppose. But Lars, to say this was designed by Real Madrid, they had an enormous amount of fortune, not just in this second leg at the Bernabeu, but in this tie. From the moment when the Šeško goal is incorrectly disallowed at the beginning of the first leg in Leipzig, to the bit at the end where Dani Olmo lobs it over Lunin and hits the top of the crossbar, and if it's a foot lower, then you're in extra time. It's really not about muscle memory. It's really not about Real Madrid always finding a way. They got there because Leipzig missed a load of chances, didn't they?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think they were lucky here. And I think Mr. Carlo Ancelotti's comments after the game are instructive. I mean, sometimes, you know, often post-match interviews, whether they be with players or with managers, are just kind of, everyone is tired and emotional and just want to get out of there, and they don't say much of anything. But I think it was very interesting listening to Ancelotti after this one, because I came away from the game thinking, huh, did they do that on purpose? ? Is kind of what I was thinking. And it was implied in commentary, I believe, that this was all just part of the plan, this performance they put in. And I wasn't quite buying it. So I was keen to see what Ancelotti said after the game. And I think reading the quotes there, he said, "It was a bad game with low intensity. The psychological aspect conditioned our game. We played against an opponent with quality who played with nothing to lose, and we had the brakes on from the start until the end. We suffered, but the important thing is that we get to the quarterfinals." And I think that was it just then. He also said the idea was to press more with energetic midfielders, but we played with the brakes on. No pressing, slow with the ball, no direct with sideways passes. And so I think it's right there. I think what Real Madrid did, especially in the first half, I think what Ancelotti says about the psychological factor is crucial, because they go into this knowing they have a 1-0 lead. They know they're up against a very dynamic RB Leipzig team that has a lot of running power, that has a huge threat on the counter-attack. So they know they don't want to take too many chances. And again, so many sideways passes, so slow, not taking any risks. And it's possible, I think, when you have that mindset, to just take it too far and not do much of anything. But then, of course, ironically, with so much of the game being conditioned by Real Madrid being anxious about the RB Leipzig counterattack, it was them on the counter who eventually got the goal, which I guess is not... is kind of natural, because as the game goes on, Leipzig, they're impaired. It's more and more important for them to go forward, and you get the sort of great, sort of mighty stride of Bellingham, waiting and waiting and waiting and playing in Vinicius for a very good counter-attacking goal. But the very short version of this is, no, this is not the game they intended to play. It's not the game Ancelotti wanted. He wanted more pressing and more intensity, but they managed to get through it through missed chances on the Leipzig side more than anything.
They've been here before, in a way. We've seen Real Madrid at this stage in a Champions League tournament, and then they've gone on to win the whole thing. But I get the feeling that this ain't like before, not when you've got the huge possibility of meeting Manchester City at some point or other. They might be able to avoid them, but Manchester City are looking like they'll be there in the final, and they'll face whoever comes up against them with an onslaught of football wizardry.
That is true, but I don't know if you can think of it like that. All you can do is control the controllables. You know, if you meet City, fine. You know, let the chips fall where they may. But in the meantime, it's like when we sort of look at the major leagues of Europe, and we say, and we've said it before, well, it's almost impossible to win Ligue 1. So that affects the mindset of everyone who's not PSG. They're not ready for a slip. And then you look at the fettle of the would-be challengers of Bayern. You know, Leipzig, especially Dortmund, have lacked something in recent years. So the whole point is, for here, Real Madrid have to be ready for Manchester City, having a bad day or getting knocked out by someone else or whatever. They can't think about, they can't put the cart before the horse. And to me, that feels like what they've done. There's such, I think, a quite poor attention to detail, which is something that I would not really expect from Carlo Ancelotti, because the way he's played it all this season with Real Madrid, tactically, has been very smart. I think the way that he's pushed Bellingham further up the pitch, that has been the big winner for him this season. But then we've talked about it before, the versatility of the players. You know, the fact that you've had Camavinga doing an okay job at left back. You've had Tchouameni looking a very good centre half. He's done it before with using Valverde, and he did it last night with using Valverde as that sort of defensive right-hand side forward. And obviously, when that didn't really work, he took Camavinga off, threw Rodrigo on, and moved Valverde a little bit back. But I think tactically, he really got it wrong, and he picked the wrong team. Now, Lars was talking about how they've got that level of caution about them in this second leg against Leipzig. I think that's absolutely right. But if that's the case, how do they let them get themselves into a position where they're so easy to break on? Because you look at the chances that Openda gets in the first half, they're exactly the sort of chances that you expect RB Leipzig to create. Now, the Openda doesn't take the chances, and there's three really good ones that he misses, which you wouldn't expect him to miss. He's a really good finisher. And maybe that's the idea of Real Madrid and their muscle memory and all that, getting in the heads of the opposition, actually. And maybe that's one of their major assets, you know, that they can psych people out just by being Real Madrid. But with the team that they picked, the team that was picked up to hold the lead, I find it remarkable that they were so easy to cut through. Because, Lars, in those moments, where, especially with that first Openda chance, you think, hang on, where's the midfield gone? Which should be one of Real Madrid's major strengths.
Yeah, given just how many midfielders were on the pitch, were basically, you could argue that Bellingham is also a central midfielder. They basically had five central midfielders on the pitch, which formationally is kind of weird, you'd think. And I find it incredibly hard to judge how good this Real Madrid team actually is, because they've not had a ton of competition domestically this season, right? Girona is a great story, but they're not, you know, at that level, and you should never expect them to be. Barcelona have obviously regressed very badly. This is not a vintage Athletic team. So, like, where's the competition domestically? They're almost winning La Liga by default. And the yardstick, as you already mentioned, is always that second leg against Man City from last season. Because that, for me, it was an almost sort of epoch-defining performance by City. One of the best I think I've ever seen them. And it's not just that they were better than Real Madrid. They were so much faster. They were so much dynamic. It looked like Real Madrid were a team from 10 years ago, whereas what Man City were doing was the football of the future. But if you look at the team that lined up against RB Leipzig, there should be no shortage of dynamism there, right? You have Camavinga and Tchouameni flanking Kroos in midfield. You've got Valverde, as you mentioned. Bellingham is a very physically capable player. Like, this is a team that should have a lot of physical capacity, should be able to play at a very high tempo with intensity, and they did the exact opposite of that. So I feel like this game didn't teach us a lot with regards to whether they've made inroads towards bridging that gap with Man City. On paper, this looks like a team that shouldn't be swept aside in the way that they were. But just seeing the lack of tempo and how apprehensive they were against RB Leipzig. I mean, I was watching this game. I always root for the underdogs, as you know. If I don't have skin in the game, I instinctively root for whoever is the less wealthy club. So I did kind of want RB Leipzig to do them. But I was also watching this game thinking, this Real Madrid team is not going to beat City, are they? Like, this doesn't look like it's going to be close. So I think that there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen there. And it is, without treading too much on Miguel Delaney's territory, I feel like this is a conversation you guys are going to have with him in not too long. But it is a problem that it seems to be the number of teams that can win the Champions League seems to be shrinking every season. And it feels like we're almost getting to a point where the conversation isn't which of these 16 teams can win it. It isn't which of these 8 teams can win it. It is which of these 2 or 3 teams can possibly beat Man City is what we're looking at. And Real Madrid definitely is one of the teams that we're hoping or thinking can do it. But they didn't look like it on this performance, you have to say.
And I wonder whether, because Andy made the point that, you know, sometimes the best you can hope for is that Man City have an off day in the Champions League. I'm not convinced, I don't know if you are, Lars, whether the team that we saw from Real Madrid last night against RB Leipzig could beat an off day Manchester City.
Well, the thing that I guess gives you hope, and this makes it sound like we have something against Man City, which we don't really. We just kind of wanted to. I can only speak for myself. Maybe you guys do, but we don't really. But we're just kind of hoping for excitement, which is kind of why we're looking for chinks in the light blue armor, and I guess the thing you'd lean on is to think that there is this sort of efficiency with Real Madrid, and there was something classically Real Madrid about RB Leipzig having all these chances, missing them, and then when you get at the one counter, the one good counter with Vinicius, he sticks it away.
Lars, I mean, we talked about Real Madrid, about how they will struggle against a sort of better opposition, I think, and they may not have the luck that they've had in the past. But we cannot argue with the kind of stats that I'm looking at. They've reached the quarterfinals in 12 of the last 14 seasons. Just as we expect something from the Man City of today, we still expect something. This is still Real Madrid, going back way beyond 12 appearances in the last 14 seasons. You know, go back 50 years or more. I wonder whether we are underestimating what we know is a quality team with a quality coach, with quality players who perhaps will turn up when they really need to turn up. Because they didn't need to win against Leipzig,
no.
Did they? They didn't need to win.
No.
And I wonder whether, you know, when I said the indiscipline of Vinicius Jr., although I think you're probably more correctly right in talking about the frustration. But when, you know, the coach sends you out and you know, as well as everybody else, that you don't need to win, there's a certain amount of indiscipline that is, you know, part of that, you know, not having the winning mentality, if you like.
No, but I think Ancelotti was completely right in saying that there were psychological factors that conditioned that performance, because I think when a team knows they have a 1-0 lead to ride on, and they know they're playing a dynamic, direct, counter-attacking team, I think it's only human nature then to be a little bit more cautious and maybe play a few more sideways passes than you normally would. If you see someone who's open, but you have Toni Kroos 5 yards to your right, you just go, well, you know, I could try to hit this high-risk pass, but also, you know, we could just keep possession because we have a one-goal lead and we're fine. I think that's just, I mean, as much as we talk about advanced tactical stratagems and things, I think that's just kind of human nature, and I think that creeps in. I think that's perfectly natural. So from that perspective, maybe we shouldn't read too much into this performance. Maybe we should just think, well, that it was a weird spot for them to be in, and they got away with it. And when you say we underestimate them, I don't think there's much doubt that they're the best team in Europe outside of the Premier League. I don't think that's a controversial statement, given Bayern Munich's troubles. Inter obviously been fantastic in Serie A, but if Inter were playing Real Madrid tomorrow, I know where. Yeah, I wouldn't be putting my house on Inter, put it that way. So I don't think that's very controversial. And I think, again, if you look at the names on the team sheet and you know what they can do, this is a team, when everyone plays to their capacity, can go all the way. And they have, as you say, that sort of institutional memory. I'm a big believer in the psychology of these things. I'm a big believer in when the players take to the field at the Santiago Bernabeu, they know that they've done this so many times before, particularly in terms of overturning deficits and particularly in terms of getting out of tight situations. To have that knowledge that players wearing this shirt has done this in this place in this way before, I think that's a huge psychological benefit for them. So I'm absolutely expecting them to go far in the tournament, even though that was a slightly dicey afternoon at the office.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Having said that, Bayern had a great day at the office, didn't they? Against a decent opposition in Lazio. And I wonder, not just Bayern, but PSG, also against Real Sociedad, had a decent day at the office. I wonder whether they could be the real opposition to... I know that we're banging on about Man City being the ones to beat, but I think that's clear. I wonder whether they, Bayern possibly, or even PSG, could be the real contenders for a Champions League matchup that, you know, that we would expect would deliver some good.
In terms of finding credible opposition for Manchester City,
yeah.
Bayern and PSG maybe didn't get quite to that point this week, but I think we look at what Real Madrid did or didn't do in terms of performance. Bayern and PSG did the opposite to that this week. Those were performances that gave you a sense of assurance, a sense of calm. And they could have been difficult situations, I think, if you look at both of them individually. Now, we look at Bayern, goal down from the first leg. They didn't play well in the first leg. They had some bad luck and they didn't respond well to those moments that went against them. And look at their league form, the fact that they're stumbling a bit at the moment. There's the departure of Tuchel. There's stuff happening upstairs at the club with the new head of sport arriving in Max Eberl. There's so much going on. And yet from the beginning, if you'd have been unaware of that context and you came to the game cold, that could have been Bayern from any time over the last 4 or 5 years, I think. You know, just a team turning up to the Allianz Arena as lambs to the slaughter. Lazio, I know people will point at that Ciro Immobile chance. That was kind of anachronistic with the rest of the game because from the first whistle to the last whistle, Bayern absolutely pounded them. And then you look at PSG's situation, which is, again, like, not as tricky a one because they won the first leg 2-0 and they were much a better team after Mbappe scored the first goal. But we talked about it with David. The idea that, you know, the atmosphere at Anoeta is something else since they brought the stands in and they're tighter to the pitch. So if Real Sociedad had hit them early, then I think PSG could have had a little wobble. But they always seemed on top of it. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, personnel is part of it. Both Bayern and PSG, Lars, have their personnel challenges at the moment. And you look at like PSG's defences, kind of decimated at the moment. You know, Lucas Beraldo is having to play far more than they would have ideally wanted him to after arriving from Brazil in winter. And yet, there was always this assurance about PSG. Now, I guess, like, when we sort of talk about how, you know, how there's two sides to this, and we were talking with Real Madrid, you know, was it a plan or were they fortunate? I do wonder, like, Bayern and PSG were very impressive. How much of that has to do with the opposition and their current poor Vettel, or can we completely take the domestic context and remove that because it's the Champions League?
I don't think you can remove it, and I would say that it's probably not a terrible time to play Real Sociedad. Things are not going tremendously well for them, and they've been losing. I mean, they've been losing games left, right, and center. It's 6 defeats in the last 7 in all competition now after they lost to PSG. So I mean that was pretty handy, but that also seemed to me like the kind of game where, which is the thing PSG have. Like, I find him slightly annoying, but he is obviously incredibly good, Kylian Mbappe. So it is one of those things where if you set up a team, if the rest of the team is not a total disaster, there's always a chance that Kylian Mbappe will win you the game. And I think especially now, you may look at the squad and think, yeah, they don't have Messi and Neymar and Di Maria and all this sort of stuff, but what they do have is a much younger group around him and more guys are willing to run a lot around him. And I think that could actually prove to be a better setup for Mbappe to have around him, ironically, even though he's still, now that he's leaving the club. So from that point of view, it's possible that actually PSG are a little bit more dangerous than they have been, defensive injuries aside, in previous seasons, because they're not carrying. I mean, I feel like you're kind of swearing in church referring to Lionel Messi as a passenger, but like without the ball, you know, past iterations of PSG, when they didn't have the ball, they had 7 outfield players on the pitch, really, because they had Messi and Neymar and Mbappe who were just kind of hanging around. Whereas now you only really have one player in Mbappe who's just hanging around. And I think that is an advantage in these sort of games. So obviously the draw with the timing is fairly convenient. But, you know, the goals, the quality that Mbappe showed in this game, I think if you have a young, vibrant, hard-working team around him, they can be a threat against anyone, as much as it pains me to say it.
I think that's the interesting thing, isn't it? The idea that we spend so much time focusing on the individuals in the Champions League. And I think the individual personalities at Bayern and PSG, you know, we haven't stopped talking about Thomas Tuchel and his situation and Kylian Mbappe and his situation in recent weeks. But what would buoy me if I was a supporter or an invested party of either of those teams is that it felt like you got a good collective bang for your buck in those second legs from both Bayern and PSG. Now, I totally agree with what Lars is saying about the increased athleticism of PSG. And they definitely, in choosing not to pick Ugarte in midfield, they went for athleticism rather than just prevention, I think, in that midfield, which I think is a good move. And then, if you look at Bayern, they're also in this, you can argue a little bit further back in this transitional period. I mean, really, both of these teams are about walking in a straight line long enough to let the star do their thing, aren't they? Whether that star is Mbappe or Harry Kane, they can win you the game if the rest of the team can work out how not to lose it, if that makes sense. And I think when you look at the names on the paper for both of these teams, and we'll concentrate on Bayern because Lars has, I think, summed up PSG perfectly. I think this is not a team at the start of the season where you would have looked at that and thought, yeah, this is going to win you something. I don't think you would look at it like that.
Well, they're not winning anything domestically,
are they? No, domestically they're not, and that is why they need to be all in for the Champions League, I think, because it's a cup competition, because not always the best team wins cup competitions. In fact, quite often the best team doesn't win a cup competition. And Manchester City, goodness knows, before last year, they found a million different ways not to win it. But I think you look at those little incremental gains in Bayern, and obviously you look at Musiala, you look at Pavlovic in midfield, who's been brilliant and is young and has got legs. And funnily enough, you look at Eric Dier as well. Bring in like a little bit of calm to, okay, he wasn't suited to Spurs. We get that. I spoke about that on the Ramble earlier this week. But I think it's interesting how valued he's felt since he's arrived at Bayern. For off pitch as well as on pitch, I think for the sort of calm he brings to the dressing room, but the calm he brings to Bayern in general, because they have just been so wired, so chaotic, so all over the place this season. With Dyer, you know exactly what you're going to get, don't you?
Yeah, and what I'd say about Bayern Munich are a couple of things. First of all, touching briefly on Tuchel, I know we've spoken a lot about this on the pod over the weeks, but just as one, I think, you know, in every crisis lies an opportunity. It's easy to look at the Tuchel situation and think that's a problem for the club. I actually think, in terms of just the Champions League campaign, I think it can be a positive. As we've seen the last few years, managing this dressing room and the egos has been a real challenge for various coaches. But Tuchel doesn't have to care about that now. He can just do what he wants. Like, and case in point being playing Kimmich at right back for this game. Like, Kimmich doesn't really want to play at right back. I'm sure Kimmich would look at the fact that Pavlovic is playing in midfield and he's being stuck at right back going like, what the hell, what's this? Like, just put Leimer at right back or something. I want to play midfield. But Tuchel now, since he's leaving anyway, he has the luxury of just going, I don't care. Like, I'm just going to stick you where I want to stick you. And if that means you don't like me anymore, tough. I'm leaving. These are the only games that matter to me. I don't care if you don't like me. It's fine. I'm leaving. Whatever. And I think that's the kind of, it's like in The Fugitive, with Harrison Ford on The Dam and Tommy Lee Jones. It's like, he's, instead of Kimmich, he's not saying he didn't kill his wife, because that would be weird, but like, he's like, I want to play in midfield. And Thomas Tuchel is like Tommy Lee Jones going, I don't care. And then hopefully, like, Kimmich doesn't throw himself off a dam, because that would be counterproductive in terms of what they're trying to achieve here. But the point is, like, I think there's a real upside here for Tuchel. And I've done a bit in a rogue moment of Larsenness. This is very uncommon, but I've done a bit of research for this, and I looked at like Bayern's domestic situation. They have 54 points after 24 games, and I'm just gonna think, is that actually bad? Like, they're 10 points behind Leverkusen. That seems bad, but is it actually that bad? And I looked at the Bundesliga after 24 games for the last 5 seasons. Last season they had 52 points. Last season they had 2 fewer points than they have right now. The season before they had 58. Okay, so that was better, but not that much better. The season before that they were on 55 points at this point. The season before that they were on 52 again. And the season before that, they were on 54. So 54 points is kind of, this is roughly pretty close to what they usually have this time of year. So this idea that they've been a total disaster domestically, I'm not sure that's actually true. I just think it's Leverkusen who've just been out of this world good and don't seem to be making any mistakes or dropping points anywhere. And Bayern are just kind of roughly where Bayern have been the last 5 years. And I think that's an important perspective to bring with us into the Champions League games. The implication is to say, well, they're 10 points behind Leverkusen. They can't possibly be any good in the Champions League. That doesn't scan. Like, they are roughly where they usually are in terms of winning games in the league. And I absolutely think it's possible for this team to go far in the Champions League, especially if Kane keeps doing the business.
What do you call Kvisha Kvaratskhelia if you're Georgian?
Kvisha Kvaratskhelia is pretty good, I think, yeah.
Lars, you've been experiencing just how much Georgians think of their four-time player of the year. Kvaratskhelia is a genuine legend, god in Georgia, is he?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've spent a bit of time in Tbilisi, in Georgia's wonderful capital of Tbilisi recently, and it's a fabulous place. You should all come. And obviously, Kvaratskhelia is... He's kind of transcended football a little bit in Georgia, because Georgia's not... I mean, Georgia's almost more of a rugby country than a football country. People are well into rugby here. But even though they're not that good at it, but they're definitely, like, watching sort of stocky men run into each other is definitely something that kind of gets the Georgians going. Whereas watching a lanky wing wizard dribbling is a little bit more counterintuitive to them. But yeah, the status that Kvisha Kvaratskhelia has is absolutely extraordinary. And he is a logical continuance of... You know, if you go back throughout history, even in the old Soviet Union times, there's always been a football tradition here, and the football tradition has been about playing technical football. You know, if you, the Georgians you can think of over the years, a lot of them are technical players, and that's always, you know, there's an element of them being like the Brazilians of the Soviet Union is a little bit generous, but there's some of that. So he definitely fits into that tradition. And no, he's absolutely huge. Not on Sunday. I had a very my Sunday was very Georgian. I ate Khinkali for dinner, the very nice soup dumplings that they make, and then I watched Kvitsa Kvaratskhelia play really well against Juventus. And he is an extraordinary player. He's having a slightly difficult second season at Napoli, but I would venture to say that is not entirely his fault.
So how closely are Napoli followed in Georgia then, Lars? I mean, is it an event, a real event when they play? And obviously more so when he's front and center, as he was against Juventus at the weekend.
Yeah, no, I've heard people say that when Napoli are playing, and if Kvaratskhelia scores, if you go out on the balcony, you can sort of hear people cheering. I didn't quite experience that on Sunday, I have to say. But of course, it is the winter now, so people are not hanging around on their balconies that much. But definitely, he is huge, because you see a lot of Napoli shirts in both, in obviously like in shops and tourist shops, but also just on the street, you will see people in Kvaratskhelia in Napoli shirts. So no, he's absolutely huge, and he's huge in a way that kind of goes beyond football. And actually, what we'll see, I mean, the national team, they're in the playoffs to get to the Euros. It's not entirely impossible that we'll see them there, which for a fairly small country that's had their problems over the last couple of decades would be very exciting.
Interesting, though, when Lars says that he hasn't had a great season in Napoli, he's still quite fancied across Europe as a player, and 4 times player of the year. Are we saying that he is perhaps underrated in Europe and fancied much more in his home country? Or are we saying that, you know, Georgian footballers aren't up to what he's doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the interesting thing about the whole Kvaratskhelia in Europe, or in Europe's big leagues, is really interesting, because when he came across, of course, Napoli signed him from Rubin Kazan, where he'd been playing in the Russian Premier League. He'd been loaned back to play in a Georgian domestic competition once the war broke out, and then after that he went to Napoli. And it's quite unusual, because thanks to, I guess, the access to media that people have, and how easy it is to see games from all over Europe and the world, and you have people like us discussing it. We've talked about this before, and fans are much, much better informed about European football than they were 20 or even 10 years ago, I would say. Maybe even 5 years ago. Anyway, I think the interesting thing about Kvaratskhelia is when he turns up at Napoli, like, pretty much no one knows who he is, because then there's a bit of distance between him and his work in the Russian Premier League, which, you know, not a lot of people watched even before the war. And so he turns up, and it's so unusual to have someone almost fall from the sky and sort of just start performing like he did last season in propelling Napoli to that title. Him and Osimhen together being the major players who did it, certainly the major forward players who did it. So it's almost this like Ziggy Stardust effect. You know, there's
I was
no
going
sort of,
for Icarus.
Okay, maybe that's this season. I think there's always this build up. I've heard a bit about this player. We've been watching him for a while, but for a lot of people, Kvaratskhelia is not on their radars at all. So this season is the difficult second album, if you like. Now, I suppose the thing is, people know enough. We're talking about how well informed people are. I think people know enough about what's going on at Napoli, to go back to what Lars was saying, to know that any statistical drop off is not entirely Kvaratskhelia's fault. And of course, he's been played in a couple of different positions. Walter Mazzarri wanted to play him in a more central position at one point and bring Lindstrom into the team. And actually, maybe they'll go in that direction in future, because they spent a lot of money on Lindstrom and they need to get the most out of him. But I think the other thing is, you have to understand the other stuff that has surrounded Kvaratskhelia this season. So firstly, he doesn't get pre-season because he's injured for a lot of it, which is absolutely crucial for any player of any standard, and particularly the amount of physical work that goes into his game. The second thing is the contract issue that's been hanging over him this season. So when his agent first comes to Naples, a couple of months into the season, he says, I've come here to discuss a new contract. And the board say, the Napoli board say, well, you're saying that we said we'd offer him a new contract. Well, we're not going to negotiate a new contract with you. Bye-bye.
We did discuss this.
Yeah, so, and he's one of the lowest paid players in the first team squad. And certainly of the starters. So that weighing on him after everything he's done last season, again, it's like Spalletti effect, but without Spalletti's ability to walk away. And so they've, post Osimhen getting his new deal, they've started discussing a new deal with him again. Now, Lars, I guess I would ask, do you think that the prospect of that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is motivating him? That prospect of the season falling to bits and wanting to play in Europe again next season is part of it? Or do you think that the possibility of a move maybe to the Premier League is something that's on the horizon for him?
Yeah, I definitely think the fact, because you're right, he's on a very small contract because he hasn't re-upped his contract since joining. And obviously he signed from Dinamo Batumi in the Georgian League, which is, you know, when you sign a guy from Dinamo Batumi, you're not going to give him a great contract because, you know, you don't need to. And people from Dinamo Batumi tend not to come in and immediately dominate Serie A. That's just not a thing that happens. But I looked at some numbers here, which are kind of indicative of how his season has gone. I mean, first of all, he's on 9 goals for the season, which, given that he scored 12 last season, it's not a huge drop-off, actually. But interestingly, he's completing more dribbles per game than he did last season, and his scoring average has actually gone up, but he's being fouled twice as often as he was last season, which I think tells you quite a lot about how it's gone, because everyone knows him now. So every opponent you're coming up against in Serie A knows that he is one of the main threats for Napoli. He's the guy who makes stuff happen. So people are going to double up on him every single time he gets the ball. So I feel like watching him this season, so much of the time, of the sort of minutes I've spent watching Kvaratskhelia this season, have been kind of slow-mo images of him being tackled and like people just kind of swarming him, because that is just kind of the second season situation. And when the team has kind of been falling apart around him, that's obviously made it harder. And when on top of that, he's not gotten a new contract, which would have been very reasonable of him to expect after that opening season. He's clearly bringing much more value to the team than they expected he would when he signed the first contract there. I think there's no real reason for him to be particularly loyal to the president or to the club, because they've not shown a lot of loyalty to him. So when the offers inevitably come this summer, yeah, of course, I think he'll be looking elsewhere. I do wonder if... I mean, I'd love to see him in the Premier League. I think that'd be a lot of fun. He's something of a throwback as a player, as I'm sure you've all seen. The way he's sort of lanky but skillful, really inventive. You can tell he's not from an academy. Like, he does surprising things. He plays with the sort of sock down, tiny shin pad type of look that isn't really common anymore. I've always, for some reason, and this would be sad given they're not my favorite club in the world, I always kind of think he has PSG written all over him. This sort of culture of wanting players to make the sniffy Parisian audience sit up and pay attention. Like, if you're going to bring in all these sort of superstars to the Parc de France, and I mean in the stands, if you're going to bring like Beyonce and Jay-Z or whoever you Shanghai into going to these games, and they just kind of sit there nonplussed and thinking, what am I doing here? What's happening? And Kvaratskhelia is a guy you want on the pitch to create some excitement and create a bit of a show for the Parisian audience. If you're going to be the sort of star-driven project that PSG have been for so much of their modern existence, he seems perfect for that. And especially when Mbappe leaves, you need people to excite the crowd to come in. And that he rightly feels that he's owed a lot of money right now from someone. PSG needs someone who can entertain and excite. This seems an absolutely perfect match, I have to say.
But he scored the opener against Juve on Sunday, when Napoli won 2-1. But that wasn't even their biggest win of the week, against Sassuolo.
Yeah, I mean, Sassuolo are absolutely floundering at the moment. But to go there on what was not much of a pitch and to show their best form, it felt like them taking out a lot of the season's frustrations, really, on a team that are in really poor form at the moment. And those two wins in a week, that... You can talk about Sassuolo's difficulties and you can talk about Juventus at the moment. Now they've not been quite the same since the Derby d'Italia, but those are two significant wins for Napoli, and for them to look like the Napoli that we knew last season, even if we know intellectually that they're not quite that. So I think that's important because it sets up the coda to the season. Of course, they have this huge Champions League game coming up at Barcelona. And, you know, Barcelona are not amazing this season. I think they have a chance in that, especially being level from the first leg and especially with away goals being out of the picture. And the other thing they have to do is try and make the top four under Calzona. I'm not quite sure if they can manage that because I think, and Nicky's talked about them a lot on here, Bologna are looking amazing at the moment. Atalanta are up there. You've had Roma having quite a decent upturn under Daniele De Rossi at the moment. So it feels like there's quite a lot of traffic for them to get through. But in terms of having a fully fit Osimhen and a fit and motivated Kvaratskhelia, those are two things that make Napoli incredibly dangerous. And there is still, you know, a little chunk of season left, isn't there?
Well, there's a little time left for this OTC. Enough time for both of you, if you don't mind, to recommend a game of the week for us to watch over the weekend. And obviously, we know you're going to eat that dumpling soup that you have.
Soup
that
dumplings.
You had in Tbilisi.
Khinkali.
Sorry? Soup dumplings.
Brilliant.
Oh, is there a difference?
Yeah, because the soup is on the inside. The dumpling is not in soup.
Oh,
the dumplings have the soup
really?
Inside them.
Okay, that's very clever.
Wow.
That's very clever.
I'm into that.
Because you make quite large dumplings with filling, and then you leave a bit of space in there so that when you boil the dumplings, the juice from the filling kind of forms the soup inside it. It's very tasty.
So how does that affect your ability to dip Georgian bread in it? Because obviously the cornerstone of Georgian food is the amazing
the
bread,
the khachapuri,
right?
Yeah, of course. No, but the khinkali you kind of hold up by the stem and then you have to nibble a slight hole in it and sort of suck the soup out. It's a very sort of skillful procedure that you will. It's very messy the first time you try. You rarely get it right in the beginning, but it's a skill.
So now
I think we've worked out how he eats his cream eggs.
That was a good one, actually. I just throw it in my mouth and eat it one go. But now that we've worked out what we're going to eat, what are we going to watch with it?
So I do think just for... There's an element of me that just kind of wants to watch Bayern and Leverkusen every weekend because it just seems... You're always still expecting the zombies to sort of eventually catch up with, you know, this is what usually happens with Bayern. But just for every weekend that goes by, it seems like, wow, it's actually not going to happen this time. Good Lord, Leverkusen are actually going to do it. So if you want to watch Bayern Munich Mainz on Saturday and watch Bayern Leverkusen Wolfsburg on Sunday, that is not a bad way to approach the European football weekend. Having just spoken about him, I do think catching a bit of Kvaratskhelia against now a Napoli team that's looking like it could be coming into some form, playing Torino on the Friday, not a bad thing if you don't have other plans on Friday night. But maybe the answer is, and I can't believe I'm saying this, maybe actually Juventus-Atalanta could be the way to go on Sunday. Because I was watching Napoli-Juventus, that was a much more fun game than I was expecting it to be. And I mean, maybe I'm a bit late to this party. Juventus haven't been as boring as the previous sort of iterations of Juventus have been. Napoli are sixth in the table. They're also in that sort of Champions League battle. So that could be a fun one on the Sunday if you don't also want to watch Fiorentina-Roma on Sunday night. Actually, I'm kind of struggling to pick one because there's just a lot of stuff going on this weekend. But let's say, just because we've spoken about him and because I want another excuse to talk about Georgian food, let's do Kvaratskhelia on Friday night. Let's watch Napoli-Torino to see if the sort of the Napoli resurgence can continue. And then you can have it, as we said, with khinkali. If you live in a city that has a Georgian restaurant, you can check it out. Georgian cuisine's amazing. And then have some khachapuri, have the khinkali. And then if there's more space, some sort of pork mitzvah-y thing with a tikmali sauce would be very, very nice at the end of that.
I'm not sure that there is much more space to have your food recommendation,
well, there's,
Andy.
There's a lot of food there. I reckon we need three or four games to eat that lot, I think. I am going to go for something not that far from the UK, just across the channel. Lens versus Brest on Saturday night. It's an 8 o'clock UK kickoff. I think this is going to be great because, of course, Lens were the team that finished only a point behind PSG last season in second place. Difficult start to this season from which they've recovered. They won 3-0 at Lyon last weekend and they're only 3 points off the Champions League places. Of course, the first of those Champions League places behind PSG is occupied by Brest. Second place. They are doing absolutely phenomenally well under Eric Weir this season. Really interesting to watch. Different ways to win games. They held on to the two players that they definitely didn't want to ship in winter, in Lilian Brassier, the defender, and Pierre-Lys Melou, who didn't do great over here in the UK, but has been brilliant since he went back to Brest and Rennes tried to sign him in the winter transfer window. So that very atmospheric Bola is one of the stadiums in European football for me. I think that'll be fantastic. But if you're going to a game in Lens, you'll probably be staying in Lille, which is just half an hour up the road. Very European, cosmopolitan city. And
boring.
For that reason...
My experience, anyway. It's quite boring in Lille.
You've clearly never stayed in Lens. I think what you're going to sit down and eat there is a bit of Flammkuchen. It's like the sort of Flandre version of tart flambé. So it's like somewhere between sort of... pizza and flatbread with all sorts of crazy toppings. You'll probably want a beer to go with it. It's you don't even need a pizza cutter to go through it. It's that thin. And yeah, it's amazing. So get involved.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.